Yeah. Right, if I get started, so evening everybody, So welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charlemont Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies' regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction-free. Thank you. So this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting with some participants joining the meeting virtually. I will now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. So we have got Councillor Harper Davies with us. Can you see and hear the meeting? You just on mute.
Yes, I can see and hear, Chair.
Thank you. And we've got Councillor Hamilton with us as well.
Thank you, Chair. I could confirm that in both Steve and Chair.
You're a little bit faint there, Councillor Hamilton.
Can you hear me now?
That's better, yeah, great.
Fine.
And then I just want to introduce Councillor Charles. So we've had a switch of members. So Councillor Seaton has left and joined a different committee and we've got Councillor Charles with us now, so welcome.
Thank you very much.
So we get started with the items on the agenda. So item one is apologies.
We've had no apologies, Chair.
Lovely, thank you. Item two is minutes of the previous meeting. Is everyone who was present at the last meeting happy with the minutes?
Yeah.
Lovely. I'll get those signed at the end of the meeting. Item three is disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Have we got any this evening? Lovely, thank you. Item four is declarations of the party whip. I'm not aware of anything, but if anybody has anything you want to raise. Thank you. And item five is questions under scrutiny committee procedure 11.16. We've got no questions submitted this evening. Item six is pre-decision scrutiny of any financial matters to be considered by cabinet. We've got no items of this nature this evening. Item seven is cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. So the following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 13th of February 2025. So the first item is item 7A, so we have the housing domestic abuse policy, and it's the item that's on the agenda supplement. So we've got Peter Oliver with us, Director of Housing and Wellbeing, Janet Glass, Head of Landlord Services, and we've got the lead member, Colin Hamilton, with us. Colin, do you want to give us a quick introduction?
Very briefly, as you see the recommendations and reasons are on page 3 of the supplementary document you have. Basically, this document gives the Council support to dealing with tenants experiencing domestic abuse. Now, the key thing to note here is we already have processes for dealing with domestic abuse. However, there's a compliance issue, as in the regulator for social housing requires us to have a separate specific policy statement on domestic abuse and how we deal with it with tenants, which is why we have this now separate document out in place. And basically what it does is it lays out our processes, it shows how we work with other organisations and how we give assurance to tenants that they will be taken seriously. So the key thing to note is that this document has been widely consulted, both internally and with other bodies. But it was consulted with HMAB, with Charnwood Housing Residents Forum, also with Living Without Abuse. So there's been a number of parties involved in shaping this document.
Lovely, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. thank you. Just to echo, the policy does ensure that compliance with the regulatory standards, which is key as we get nearer to our inspection as a landlord service, but also to provide that clarity for all of our staff and partners. Just like to point out, I'm afraid, an erroneous cut and paste, which is in the document on page 5, under consultation, the second paragraph starting with sought advice, the third line down should read to consult, and I'm afraid it has HMAB 18th of September 2024 referenced in there, which needs to come out.
Okay.
So apologies for that. Mm-hmm. But nothing else to add, thank you, Chair.
Anything else you want to add, Peter?
Very quick, Chair.
Thank you. I'll stop very briefly. From my perspective, it was just really good to see it written down in a policy. So I was aware that we had something had come to one of the meetings previously, I think that I attended, where we saw something on how we handled domestic abuse within landlord services. But to see how that would be managed was really helpful, I think, from my perspective as a member, to see that we support our tenants in that manner. So I thought that was really helpful. I had one small question, which was that obviously the policy is based on sort of 16 plus, which I understand is where the law is around domestic abuse. But I know that there's been a few cases kind of more recently where domestic abuse has happened, but it hasn't been labelled as domestic abuse under the age of 16. What would we do as a council if we were made aware of that situation? Obviously this policy wouldn't necessarily kick in because it isn't officially domestic abuse on paper, but as far as the abuse goes, it would follow a similar manner. What would our situation be? I mean, I'm guessing it would be some kind of safeguarding referral, but
absolutely.
It just crossed my mind when I was going through it, and it reminded me of a case that had obviously happened quite recently.
Yes.
So.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm aware of the case you're referring to, and it's a very good question about how we would manage and respond to such incidents, but Pete's absolutely right, it would be a safeguarding referral, and if there was any clear criminal activity, we would obviously be referring, we'd be dealing with that as well in liaison with the police. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. We open up to further questions. Councillor Lenny?
The first bit that I was reading that I asking the question to myself, although I think it's addressed in another item on this report, where a survivor of domestic abuse leaves the property that they're a tenant or a joint tenant or a partner of a tenant, does the perpetrator still live there if it's under occupied, or do we try to persuade them to go somewhere else?
I believe that we've changed our allocations policy and our view on this, so that if it's a joint tenancy, then the survivor of the domestic abuse could end that tenancy, rendering the perpetrator homeless and then reapply for housing in their own right. So we have recognised that as an issue and changed that.
And the other bit was where the survivors of domestic abuse do come to the housing allocations people for support to try and get somewhere to live, it can be quite a daunting prospect for them, and I wondered whether there are, on such occasions, whether you could ask them to come with either an advisor from an abuse charity or a friend who's supportive of them to come to that, not just if they wanted to. And if they didn't want to and were obviously struggling, would you suggest that?
Absolutely. You're quite right, and it's extremely difficult, and we have to deal with every case with the utmost sensitivity. So we would want to ensure that the survivor is as comfortable as possible when they're disclosing information to us. Excuse me. And to ensure that they feel adequately supported. So if they don't have somebody appropriate with them, then we can always signpost them to those organisations who can provide that specialist support that they
right. Might need. The last one, I think we'll tap on it, I thought I'd lost it. On page 20 where it says who needs to know about the outcome of the assessment, I didn't know whether it would be wider reaching than publishing it on the council's website, but things that I've seen, adverts and advice notices that I've seen for other sort of, not just domestic abuse, but other sort of traumatic situations in people's lives, they put notice boards or little flyers up in public toilets and on shop advertising boards and parish council boards and what have you. Would that be an option for this, so that people who feel that they can't just wander off or and find help, or have it placed in public places where they might go and be able to notice it?
We already have information on our website, so we will look to see whether that requires refreshing. As part of the rollout of this policy, we will be looking at communications, so we have our tenant newsletter where we can provide that information. I think we'd also want to talk to our partners around what might be the best way to disseminate this in the community as well, if there are particular groups or places where we've
already used it. If it's something like toilets, you've got the individual sexes going in each toilet and
it's the same
they hopefully
place.
Don't have their abusive partner with them if they go there. But I just thought like play schools and bus stops even, stuff like that.
That would be part of the rollout, I think, that communications
element.
Okay,
thank you.
I'm going to go to Councillor Hopper-Davies, just online next.
Thank you, Chair. Reading through the report, there's a typo on page 8, under section 4.3, 4.31, headed D. They've entered into a civil partnership agreement whether or not the agreement has been terminated. I think just there's a different typo on the end there. And then I just really wondered, if the domestic abuse is often driven by alcohol or drugs, how will that be addressed in the report, please? Or in the policy?
So we would offer, as part of our response, we may want to signpost the perpetrator to support agencies that could assist them. And there are some organisations out there that can help perpetrators of domestic abuse. So I think that would be part of our risk assessment when we undertake the initial disclosure, and if that comes out in the course of the management of the case. So we have organisations that we can refer to who are specialists who can deal with this sort of issue. So we would seek to help, if that was possible, the perpetrator to address that behaviour.
Thank you. Okay. And then just secondly, in addition to Councillor Lenny's remark, I think Councillor Lenny, you're referring to the Ask Angela posters, aren't you?
Yeah.
Which you often see in Ladies News and things. And that isn't a bad idea, because when I know the staff in the policy, potential policy, can approach people can go into the council, but it just might be a nice idea, because if someone feels uncomfortable with discussing domestic abuse, there could be like a word like Ask Angela, so someone will feel safe in sort of opening up and looking for help. So if that could be considered, it's a really good idea.
Thank you. Well, certainly take that back. Thank you,
Chair.
Have we got any other questions or comments? Yeah, Councillor Charles.
Thanks, Chair. Can I just ask for a bit of clarification, please? I'm looking at page 6, and it's the scope of this policy. This policy applies to all tenants of Charnwood House. Would this policy apply to people that may be in temporary accommodation or waiting for a property?
It would.
And would that be people that may be affected, or people that may be carrying out abuse, would they all fall into this policy? So
yes.
Maybe that possibly needs to be just clarified, that it covers all, not just people that are already in tenancy. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have you got any other questions or comments? No? I think they are finished on the discussion for that one. Is everyone happy with the recommendations in the report for this item?
Yeah,
yep.
Yes, Chair.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Councillor Hoff Davies. Yep, that's with me. Thank you. Thank you. we move on to item 8. We've got pre-decision scrutiny, the Cabinet response. So go to Karen Willis and respond.
Thank you, Chair. So this report sets out the Cabinet's response to recommendations of the Commission on a pre-decision scrutiny item taken at the last meeting of Cabinet relating to the English Devolution White Paper. It's for note in this report, so I've got nothing further to add.
Thank you. And then item 9 is scrutiny panel. So if we can get an update on where we are with scrutiny panels from Karen Wilson again.
Thank you, Chair. So this is an update report on the review of the scrutiny panels. So there's three ongoing, although having said that, the budget scrutiny panel has now finished and the final report of the budget scrutiny panel is going to Cabinet this Thursday on the 13th of February. And then the flooding scrutiny panel, that we believe is due to have another meeting in early March, but Councillor Harper Davies, who's the chair, may wish to add the potential dates in there. And then finally, the third scrutiny panel that's ongoing is the housing needs scrutiny panel, and that last met on the 28th of January. And also, while I'm presenting this report, I wanted to just remind members we've got the scrutiny workshop next week, where you come up with ideas for potential scrutiny panels for the next municipal year. So thank you.
We suggested earlier that we get a reminder out on the workshops as well, because ideally the more people that attend, as far as councillors, it goes out to everybody rather than just people in this committee. So the more the merrier, really, to get some fresh ideas.
Have I replied at all? It's
online.
It's online.
So.
Yeah, but I've got something. I've got something else on.
Well, if you've got any ideas beforehand, maybe send something okay. in. We can do it that way.
Councillor Harper Davies, do you know the dates of the next flooding meeting?
Yes, I do, Chair. It's March the 4th, and then April the 7th is our final meeting.
Thank you. Okay, so if we move on to item 10. We've got the scrutiny work programme. So this first one is the finance and performance work programme.
So thank you, Chair. So yes, this is the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee work programme. If members have got any changes, please let us know. But I think it's as presented. Any comments, suggestions?
There wasn't anything I picked up. If anyone else has got any comments or anything that they've seen in there.
No, in that case we'll take it for noting.
Yeah. And then item 11 is the Scrutiny Commission work programme, so our own items.
So this is the work programme for the Scrutiny Commission, and then the list of key decisions that gets published every 28 days, which obviously forms a lot of the pre-decision items. I believe most things have actually been picked up, so I'm not aware of any changes. So I think the Chair might have.
We just got one amendment that we would like to look at. So we've got the agency staff costs coming to the March meeting, but we're going to have a really heavy agenda in March. And the agency staff costs, although we really want to see it, there wasn't a specific reason why it had to come in March. So we're suggesting that gets pushed back to April. Otherwise it's going to be a very, very heavy agenda for March. It just makes sense for it to be even out the flow slightly. Everyone happy with that?
Yeah,
if we can get that action, Sally. Thank you. Okay. I was like looking for another agenda item then. That took us to the end of the meeting. So thanks everybody. Quick meeting this evening. As I said, the March meeting is going to be much heavier with the agenda items, but the next meeting will take place on the 10th of March.